We're sitting around talking movies. We're sitting around talking movies with Bill Bregoli.
Hi there.
We're sitting around talking movies with Bill McCuddy.
Is he here?
I'm Neil Rosen. We're talking Elvis and Nixon today.
Thank you very much.
We're talking about Tale of Tales. We're talking about the Nina Simone biopic called Nina. We're talking about the Tribeca Film Festival, some movies that are playing there, including The Family Fang. And we're talking about,
From Chris Walken, won't we?
We will hear from Christopher Walken.
There's a reason I'm here.
That's right. We don't even have to play the actual Christopher Walken.
We can all just do dueling Walkens.
That's right. Bill, do you have a Bregoli? Can you do it?
No, he brought the real one.
I know better than
he's got sound from the real guy.
Okay, so Elvis and Nixon. There's this famous photograph that was taken in 1970, and it's the most requested photograph, apparently, ever in the National Archives.
We learned that in the film.
Yeah. It's
we learned that in the trailer, actually.
It's a black and white photograph of Richard Nixon shaking hands with Elvis Presley in the White House. Nixon is wearing his conservative suit, and Elvis is wearing his, big... 15-inch belt buckle and crazy, open shirt down to his belly button and everything like that, and huge big sunglasses, and he's Elvis, So this is a movie about how that photograph came about. Now, before I talk about what happens in the movie, but McCuddy, do you think this is just a writer's invention of what happened, or do you think
say that Nixon was famous, including 18 minutes that were missing, for recording what happened in the Oval Office. This is not part of that 18 minutes, so it is supposed. Both guys are dead, and so there's some artistic license that's been taken. But I have to tell you, I thought this thing had a paper thin premise. And I was kind of blown away by it. It really has a vibe and a feel. And you look at Michael Shannon's work. Let's talk about him for a second.
Well, Michael Shannon is
Take Shelter.
Awesome.
Think of all the stuff he's been in that he doesn't look or sound like Elvis Presley. And he's actually a little too thin and too tall to play Elvis. But that aside, he's captures a spirit of this guy. In the same way that Kevin Spacey does for Nixon. It's not the perfect Nixon. It's not Dan Aykroyd's Nixon. It's
or Rich Little's Nixon.
Yeah, right.
Or... actually, who's a great Nixon? There's a movie called Dick with Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Williams and Dan.
Which one of them was it?
Dan Hedaya, who most audiences might know
from Clueless, the dad in Clueless.
He also had a recurring role on Cheers, playing Carla's ex-husband, Nick.
And awesome in Blood Simple, one of the,
Very first. And so he's the best Nixon that I've ever seen. I hated Anthony Hopkins' Nixon in the movie, in the Oliver
Stone. They're all doing this shaking of the jowls, and there's always way
Hopkins,
over the top.
British accent.
That was my Nixon,
kept
by the way.
Creeping into that particular.
British, always to British. If it was
bloody
an Italian
hell.
Accent, he wouldn't have minded.
I know, but Dan Hedaya looked like Nixon, and he had the sweat, the flop sweat pouring off his thing.
Actually, before we started recording, Bill brought up a good point about how this seemed very much off the cuff.
Yeah, the whole movie to me played the analogy I made was the 2,000-year-old man with Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner, which reportedly happened.
Party.
Well, who knows? I mean, maybe they went in with that shtick, but supposedly at a party they said what would happen if you interviewed the 2,000-year-old man, and they did it at this party and became a big hit. This movie
and
feels
said,
to me
you've got to record this. You've got to record this, and they made an album, and the album became a big smash success.
And this movie feels to me like you had Kevin Spacey and Michael Shannon in a room, and there was a bowl with famous names in it, and they each pulled the names out, and they started going, "Okay, I'm Nixon, and you're Elvis."
Well, I don't think that's
happened.
How it happened.
No, it's
but
sure it didn't.
It's an interesting.
But it has that off the cuff kind of feel to
me. Okay, so here's what happens in this movie. So, according to this movie, and I don't know if this is true or not, although I did Wikipedia it after the movie, and they say that there is the basis of what I'm about to tell you happened to some extent, is that Elvis showed up unannounced at the White House at a gate, and he's just like, I'm
with
Elvis Presley.
A letter.
I'm Elvis Presley, and I want you to give this letter to the president. And then he decided that he wanted to actually meet the president. Well, what Elvis wanted is he wanted to be an undercover narcotics agent because he was very dissatisfied with the direction the youth of America was going in 1970. He thought the Beatles were were trying to corrupt the Beatles and the Stones were trying to corrupt the youth of America, and he wanted to be undercover and go bust up narcotics rings. And even Nixon goes, "You want to be undercover?" I mean, he has the most recognizable right. face like in the world.
He goes, "They'll recognize you."
Well, I've done 31 movies, and I work with the greatest makeup artists, and you know, like, but the whole thing was ludicrous. And all Elvis is consumed about is getting this shiny narcotics badge. It's like, can I get the badge? I want the badge. And he's showing these really low-end badges. This is a badge from the Memphis
right.
district.
Because he serves on the, yeah, he is a sheriff or a sheriff's
assistant. But he's like a 10-year-old. He just wants
Shelby
to get the
County.
Shiny badge. And so most of the movie, I think once he meets Nixon, which is at the end of the movie, that's kind of a hoot, and that's kind of funny. I mean, it's like these two people trying to find
the whole thing is,
common
it's really
ground.
Short, Neil. I think you need to point out it's like 80, 85 minutes.
Yeah, but
it's
I'm saying the meeting is great because these two people who are the polar opposites have nothing in common, trying to find something to talk about. And
what's funny in the setup is that all of Nixon's people say, look, this is just going to be a quick meet and greet. Even Nixon tells his
5 minutes.
Give me 5 minutes and I want you to come in and
meeting.
Tell me I've got a meeting or something. And of course, you know what happens. They come in with 5 minutes and go, you have that thing with the, oh, leave me alone. No, not now. So so they're having a great time. Nixon, and what's really funny, not to give too much away, is that a couple of things. Nixon wants an autograph for one of his daughters, and Elvis goes,
well,
what about the other daughter? And, well, she's not so much into you. But what he really wants is a picture. Nixon's been convinced by the people.
Julie
but no, wants. But also for his PR.
Right.
Nixon's been convinced that Elvis is sort of a gateway to a whole younger audience, and if he could, which funny is, Elvis shows up and turns out he's an old man. Like, he thinks the country is too like liberal and great. So there's a lot of funny things going on in the movie. And you know, at first Elvis says, no pictures. There are not going to be any pictures. And crestfallen, Nixon looks like China just decided to end trade with the United States. He can't believe it. And then of course they loosen up and he shows him some karate moves.
Right. But here's the thing: what you're describing, McCuddy, is the last like 20-25 minutes of the movie, and the entire movie up to that is Elvis hanging out in a hotel trying to see that if his people can get him this meeting with Nixon, which I think is okay, but I don't think the movie really starts cooking until that meeting takes place.
Well,
it's
I disagree.
Kind of a one
it shows his relationship with all his hangers-on. It shows how loyal he was to all of those people.
Well, they're
people.
All humoring him. He's nuts. I mean, Elvis really...
Well, he's nuts until they get in. They all think he's not going to get into the White House, and what happens? He does.
But he's Elvis. Of course, Elvis could do anything he wants.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I think it had its moments. I think there's a scene when
So you're recommending it or not recommending
it? I would recommend it. I would just say for on demand it's good where it is. And, you know, there's a scene that I really like prior to this when he walks into a diner with all African-American customers, and they're, like, shocked to see Elvis, you know? So it's kind of like the way people react to Elvis. He goes into the Bureau of Narcotics, and all the women that are working there are just screaming, and it's like, oh my God, it's Elvis. If I knew Elvis was coming today, I was going to dress differently. So it's just the way, and Elvis has this interesting line about the fact that they don't really see, I'm this thing, he goes, they don't see me as Elvis. They don't see me as the person Elvis. They right. see me as this thing.
Well, so, you're used to that, Neil Rosen, walking around New York.
Oh, yeah. No, it's Bill Bergoli.
Really,
it's Bill Bergoli.
It's the icon. It's
that,
not really. You're
right.
Just a human being.
That's so I don't know. I think that it's slow going till the meeting, but I still there's enough in it that for an 80-some-odd minute movie on demand, I think that it's
sequence is great. Had me from the very beginning. I was smiling, and again,
I have to tell you,
it's very 70s, sort of Austin Powers-y.
The problem with the movie is that they don't use any Elvis Presley music, and they could have had some great like when Nixon.
See, I didn't miss that at all.
When Nixon originally tells,
I think that's happening in your brain while you're watching the whole
when
thing.
When Nixon's people are telling him, no, the meeting's not going to happen. They could have played Don't Be Cruel. Or when, you know, Nixon wanted to, like, bust narcotics agents, they could have played Jailhouse Rock. But no, instead they're playing, like, Otis Redding stuff. And it's just, in an Elvis movie,
they were just setting
got,
the time.
The music rights to that probably would have cost more than that.
Right,
Johnny
I think that
Knoxville
was a problem.
Was kind of a waste,
Johnny Knoxville was fine.
Well, anyway, we're going to move on to our next movie now. And that would be a movie
called...
Was
that Ed Sullivan? No, you were good. So now...
So let's talk about a movie called... Tale of Tales, which was a real pleasant surprise.
Yeah,
this Tell us about it there, Bill McCuddy.
Well, what's cool about it is it's opening day and date. It's VOD, it's video on demand, and the same day it's opening in theaters. And it's a fairy tale with three stories in it. Salma Hayek is a queen in one of them, and John C. Reilly has kind of a cameo as the king, not to give too much away. And then Vincent Cassell is a rogue kind of country gentleman who I guess becomes a king.
He's a king who has an insatiable sexual appetite.
Yeah, there's a scene with him in a stagecoach with two women that will blow your mind. So I recommend it just for that. And the last one is a Lilliputian
Toby Jones.
King played by Toby Jones, who has a daughter who he marries off to an ogre.
Well, the great thing about that one is that he has a pet flea that turns into the size of like a VW Beetle.
Yeah, he pricks his finger and this flea
he raises the flea
eating, drinking his blood, and he raises this. Yeah, it's all very odd and very kind of Terry Gilliam-esque, and I think the studio didn't know what they had on their hands, and they haven't been promoting it like a mainstream movie. But I think this deserves to be a big hit.
I really like this movie.
I liked it from start to finish. It's got some really odd stuff in it, like the heart of a sea urchin monster that has to be consumed so that Salma Hayek can become pregnant. She does. She and another woman give birth on the same day to obviously twins that look like albinos. It all sounds bizarre when I explain it.
Yes, the whole thing sounds bizarre. But, you know, I've always said that if you have a linear, straight movie without any bizarre stuff in it, and all of a sudden it becomes bizarre, it doesn't make sense. But this is bizarre from the get-go.
Right.
So if I'm going to buy into this bizarreness, like nothing is reality. I mean, there's an ogre. There's an old woman who all of a sudden meets a witch who turns her into a young woman. I mean, you know, it's a fairy tale for grown-ups, and there's a lot of mystical, magical stuff that goes on, and it's a lot of fun. I don't like the ending. It just kind of ends. But all the stories are resolved, so, you know, it's just not any kind of dramatic ending. But it's not really so much about the ending is the journey for me, and it's a fun journey. And Toby Jones, who is raising this flea, is just very kind of fun. Is funny.
I'll tell you the other thing that with three stories to juggle with a loose tie together of some traveling circus, it does a really good job of jumping around in the three stories and telling all three completely. So I give it a rave, and I think, you know, either see it in a theater or it's fine to see at home.
I liked it a lot. The costumes are great. The sets are great. There's a lot of probably on location using old castles in
Prague
England,
or who knows where they were.
Or Italy or something. I don't know. It was really, really well done. So, Mr. Bill Bregoli.
Yes, sir.
What have you seen at Tribeca? Tribeca Film Festival is currently going on right now. What did you see? You saw the...
I saw The Family Fang, which you saw too.
I like The Family Fang.
It's got Jason Bateman, Nicole Kidman, Christopher Walken, and Mary Ann Plunkett, who's a stage actress, and it's based on a novel by David Lindsay Abair, who also wrote the screenplay, and it's about a brother and sister who return to the family home after their wacky performance artist parents have disappeared.
Well, what's interesting about this movie to me is they're doing these candid camera type stunts. You know, like if you remember the TV show Candid Camera, they do these candid camera type pranks on people, but they're not
for
doing,
television or not
no,
for,
they're
no,
doing
for their
it
own
art.
Amusement.
They, well,
own
they film it, art. And they Christopher Walken and Marianne Plunkett see it as art, and they use their young children to be part of these scams. Like the kid goes up with a note to the bank at the beginning of the movie, and he goes, "I want all your lollipops." You know what I mean? And Christopher Walken's dressed up as the security guard, so the kids are involved in this. And then, you know, you flash forward to like now they're adults and they're played by Jason Bateman and Nicole Kidman, and they're all kind of like messed up.
Right.
You know?
He's a writer and she's an actress.
He's also the director, we should point out. And
yes,
this is Jason Bateman's second, and I loved Mean Words.
Bad Words,
the first thing he did.
Yeah. Well, this is very different from Bad Words. This is not and I talked to Jason Bateman about this. It's not, although there are some very funny parts in this, he doesn't want to build this as a comedy because he doesn't want people to come and see, think that they're seeing,
a Jason Bateman comedy.
A comedy. Right.
It's a
dramedy. But there are some very funny, dark comedic moments in this. But it's a dramedy. There's very dramatic parts in it as well. I think Jason Bateman is somebody to watch as a director because between Bad Words and now this, he's very, very talented. And Christopher Walken,
he's Christopher Walken,
but I think it's one of his finer performances, and you talk to him.
That's right. Actually, one of the things when we say it's Christopher Walken, he always plays dark roles, and he talked about how that started early in his career.
Early in my career, I started playing, troubled, disturbed people, suicidal, villainous. And I did that, and I may have, crossed some kind of line because it's true, it's pretty much all I get offered. But most actors don't work much, so can't complain.
And it was interesting also in that because Jason Bateman directed this, they didn't have a huge budget, and they didn't really get to look at dailies. And Christopher Walken told us that when he does get to look at dailies, he knows when he's done a good job.
With me, it's always been, if I thought I did a good take, it is. It's very interesting. It is exactly what I thought it was. If I thought it was a good take and I watched it, it's a good take. If I thought I was, phony, it's what it is.
And finally, going back to Christopher Walken and his crazy roles that he's always cast in, we asked him what he really wanted to play.
I'd like to play a nice man with kids. Have them say, what should I do? And I say, do the right thing.
He did play a nice dad, sort of, in Catch Me If You Can, but he didn't really raise Leonardo DiCaprio to do nice things. Leonardo DiCaprio came, the guy that went out and tried to con everyone. Yeah. But yeah, for the most part, I think audiences have a hard time seeing him as anything close to a Ward
funny.
Cleaver or anything that, like a normal dad.
Well, what's that movie that he was in with Brendan Fraser when he's with Sissy Spacek? Blast from the Past. And there he's like a suburban Ward Cleaver kind of dad. They're living in the bomb shelter. But, I asked Christopher Walken when I interviewed him recently for this particular movie. I said, I watched this movie the other day. I'm in a movie theater, and I'm seeing this movie called Eddie the Eagle. You saw Eddie the Eagle, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And
right.
So he comes on at the very end of the movie, and the audience is laughing hysterically when he comes on, and it's not a comedic role. Right. He's this former coach to
he has to live that
Hugh
down,
Jackman,
I'm sure, wherever he goes.
And whoever played Eddie the Eagle, and he's this guy
Edgerton.
What's that?
Taron Egerton.
Right. So he comes on, and the audience is, and he starts talking, and he goes, "When I wrote my book about being a ski jumper many years ago, everybody just starts laughing." So I told him the story, and I go, he had told me years ago that he doesn't do Saturday Night Live anymore because everybody keeps identifying him with comedy, and he wants to kind of get away from that. And I go, "But look, here's a movie where you're playing a dramatic role. You come on in the end, and people laugh." He goes, "Well, I guess I've got to just live with the way things are. That's the way it is now." So,
He struck me a lot like Keith Richards. You'd think of him as crazy and very eccentric, and then you meet him and you realize he's crazy, but he's smart.
Well,
he's been doing this a long time. I think he knows his wheelhouse, and I think he was in a bad thing we saw a couple of weeks ago about
the
lounge singer guy and his daughter.
It's called
played by Amber Heard.
It's called One More Time.
One More Time. And look, I think he knows what he can and can't do. And when you force him to do something like
more
the
cowbell.
Eddie the Eagle,
more
you're thinking like more cowbell or the Continental. Don't be afraid. Come back. Where are you going? So,
do you know that the Continental was in the and before my time, but the Continental,
we're talking about a sketch on Saturday Night Live.
Yes, that was based on an actual show, The Continental, that was played for female audiences that were home in the 1950s, and it was a guy who would introduce either
records or
no, it was old movies and stuff.
Oh,
and he was doing the interstitials, he was like, "Thank you for coming and joining me this afternoon.
We're going
to have a wonderful afternoon
that's
together.
Funny.
I have wine for us, and I have cheese."
So anyone who hasn't seen the sketch, the camera is the person. So it's the point of view of
and when he's hitting
a
on
woman,
everybody. If nobody knows, it still works, having not known that, but he takes this charming Latin American guy that was from the 50s and does it five steps further because he's just trying to like make it with all these women. But if you watch the original, it's probably on YouTube, it's crazy. It's this guy, I'm the Continental. We were going to have a lovely, you and me were going to spend quality time together.
It's like if the most interesting man in the world had a television show.
They fired the most interesting man in the world.
Yeah, I know. I was sorry to see that.
I bet he comes back. I think he's going to be like New Coke. It's not going to work, and they're going to bring back the world's most interesting
Or they'll
man.
Find a kid. They'll find his son. You know, he betted all these women, so now I'm the most interesting son
in the
world.
Well, they did that on Saturday Night Live. Joseph Gordon-Levitt played. He's the son of the most interesting man in the world, and he was this boring guy, and he can't keep up with his dad. And
I named that campaign the best campaign of the year like 5 years ago when I was at Forbes.
I
love those commercials.
Stay thirsty, my friend.
Stay thirsty. Which technically means don't drink the beer. I pointed that out
to
the owners.
Oh, that is true.
To the ad agency.
Oh, that's interesting.
Stay thirsty means don't drink the beer.
You know, I'm a big fan of Nina Simone. I really do love her. I think she's a great artist.
Or you were until
yes,
you saw
I
this
was.
Movie.
And now there's a biopic called Nina with Zoe Saldana playing... Excuse me. Playing...
you're verklempt because you like Nina Simone, and this movie is not great.
It is not a great movie on any level. And first, it was this whole... controversy surrounding the movie. Do you know about the controversy, Bill?
Because they thought she was too light.
That's right. They thought she was too light-skinned to play. Nina Simone always would talk about the fact that she missed out on roles and jobs because of the darkness.
She was not
of
a fair-skinned black or
And also
skinned.
That her nose was, how would you
too
describe
it? Too big, too...
Flattened to an extent. And they had to put a prosthetic nose on Zoe Saldana and darken her skin. And there was a big controversy surrounding the fact that people didn't feel that she was the right person to be cast. But I think regardless of what side you come on to that argument, I think casting Zoe Saldana in the lead role is the least of this film's problems. This film has got more... First of all, it's by first-time writer-director Cynthia Mort, and for some reason, she decides to focus on the last few years of Nina Simone's life, where she's a broken-down alcoholic, irate, obstinate, mentally ill, bipolar person who gets committed, then comes out and hires her nurse's aide, this guy played by David Oyelowo.
Kind of wasted, actually. Great actor.
Who's probably the most boring character going, hires him to be her personal aide and then her manager. And who cares about any of this?
Someone actually says in the movie, no one cares about your comeback. And the whole movie is about her being a comeback. And you think, I kind of agree with that guy.
I mean, she had an interesting career. And you're shown none of it. I mean, none of the musical genius of this woman and her glory. There's a brief scene for a couple of minutes where in 1963 they flash back to she's about to go on stage at the Village Gate in New York City. And she's talking to Richard Pryor, who's also on the bill that evening. And that... Give me 20 stories of her coming up and meeting people like Richard Pryor, and you've got an interesting movie, as opposed to them just hanging out on the French Riviera, Zoe Saldana and David Oyelowo going like with her just throwing...
You should go to the gym. I'm not going to the gym.
Stop watering down my champagne.
Right.
And she throws a bottle and smashes it across the room. You've got this brilliantly talented woman, Nina Simone, to work with in her story, and all you're showing is her like
Sunset Boulevard.
Right.
There is a very good documentary about her.
That is a good documentary.
Everyone, I don't know if it's available on demand, but
it's
everyone,
on Netflix. Actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
So that what happened, Miss Simone, or whatever? Yeah. So,
did you like that film?
That I liked,
tell everybody about that one.
Well, I got to tell you, it's her story. It's told by a lot of people who knew her, and they have a lot of footage from her, It's just very well done, and it got itself an Oscar nomination, didn't win, but it's really worth seeing if you want to fill in the gaps from her life, particularly the early years that this film left out.
Plus, I got to tell you, Zoe Saldana insists on, or the director insisted on, not using the Nina Simone recordings. Zoe Saldana sings, and although she has a lovely voice, it sounds nothing like Nina Simone. It's not like when Joaquin Phoenix decided to do his own singing on right. Walk the Line and was Johnny Cash, and he sounded, I was like, oh my God, he sounds just like, you know, I hear the train a-coming.
This would be like if Justin Timberlake played Sinatra and, like, sang as Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, it's a very good example. So does she sing well? Yes. Does she sound anything like Nina Simone? So this movie is off on just so many different areas. I think it's a wasted opportunity. And, you know, I don't know.
So run to it. Please, by all means, rent it. No, we're saying Nina to Nina.
yes.
What else we got?
Well, we got, what do you got, Bill? What do you want to talk about?
Well, this is Tribeca Film Festival weeks, and we've all been invited to stuff. I have to say that, you know, I'm of all the film festivals that happen, this is the one that happens in our backyard. I actually prefer the one in the Hamptons, and I'm not just saying that because I
love the Hamptons. It's so because we were all there. If you want to go back catalog, you can find our podcast, Bill Bregoli, Bill McCuddy, and Neil Rosen at
the
Hamptons.
The first time we ever did one of these recordings and had to worry about bees.
Well, yes, the bees.
The bees were there.
That's right.
And, not bee films.
I love the Hampton bees. Film Festival, which is every year, you know.
The idea of the Tribeca Film Festival is great. And when it started with Jane Rosenthal and Robert De Niro, it was a brilliant idea to bring revenue back to downtown.
It happened right after the World Trade Center went down.
So that was great. The problem is it's never been able to get the really, really great films to open. And this year is no exception. I can't think of anything I had to run down and see. So,
well,
although your Family Fang was there, right?
Family Fang is there. We're going to talk next week about it, and I'm interviewing the cast of a movie called High Rise, which is playing at Tribeca. Tribeca has a lot of films. They have like 200 films that play at that festival, and it's almost too many. When you look at, and listen, I'm not going to undermine the festival. I mean, it does a great thing for downtown New York. It's a great thing for New York in general. And there are some really good movies that play there. There are movies, though, that play there that you'll never get to see again. I mean, you know, I saw a movie there a couple of years ago called City Island with Andy Garcia.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it took a year for that movie to, like, see the light of day.
We had something on this week or last week.
Last week,
show.
Yeah, that took a year.
It takes
played
a year
last
to get
year's.
Here.
It was the James Franco Amber Heard movie that looked at. But we did that last year at Tribeca, and it's just opening up
right
now.
Nothing ever rushes from Tribeca into theaters, which is not a good sign in and of itself.
Well, they're having the 40th anniversary. I'm going to be talking to Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese, Jodie Foster, and other
Paul
people.
Paul Schrader.
They're going to have the 40th anniversary of Taxi Driver this year at the festival. They have a lot of interesting
and
talks.
They're reuniting everybody, as you just mentioned, for that. I mean, they're not.
Except for Albert Brooks.
They're literally showing up, yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a good film festival. I mean, if you're in New York in these weeks of April and you're looking for something to do, you go down and it's all downtown. Although it's spread out. It's spread out more around the city, and I don't know, it's something fun to do. But to go back to the Hampton Film Festival again, I think that's a more navigatable, if I'm pronouncing that word right, festival. You've got like 20, 30 movies, and you get a buzz on six or seven of them. And I've seen every Academy Award winning movie over the last few years. This year I saw Spotlight, and last year I saw Birdman, and the year before I saw Argo. So every year I see the...
Right.
You know.
And the celebrities are, as we've said before, and I don't mean to be redundant, they're walking up and down the streets of them. It's not like New York where you're not sure where if you're going to ever bump into anybody. You
know,
bump into
like
all kinds of stars out
it's
there.
Like going to baseball spring training, the Hampton Film Festival. Because when you go to baseball spring training, all of a sudden you're up close with the players. They'll talk to you. They'll give you an autograph.
Right.
And you're seeing it in a small little venue, but you're
very
seeing...
Very relaxed.
You know, very relaxed.
Very relaxed.
And that's kind of the way the Hampton Film Festival is as well. And Tribeca, there are things to recommend in Tribeca. You know, go online to Tribeca Film Festival. I think TribecaFilmFest.com. And I'm sure there's something to please almost everybody's taste.
Well, and the other thing we can tell people listening around the country that's kind of cool is that the Time Warner platform, anyway, for On Demand, offers those, a lot of those movies during this week on the channel. So you can see some of the movies there.
That's true. That's true. Any parting words?
No. What are we doing next week?
What are we doing next week? Well, we're going to talk about that movie High Rise. I don't think the new Captain America is next week. I think that's the week after.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there'll be lots of fun stuff. What are we talking about next
week, though? A movie that is on demand right now that looks kind of cool.
That's right. We're going to talk about Colonia, and we're going to talk about Son of Saul comes out on DVD.
A wildly overrated Academy Award winning
best foreign language film. And
The Gray Zone is a better version of the same story.
And we're going to talk about whatever's opening up, the big blockbuster movies that are opening up in theaters next week. Anyway, thanks, Bill Bregoli.
Hey, many times.
Thanks, Bill McCuddy. Bill McCuddy.
I was in the building anyway.
You didn't see your signature line this week.
We watched the bad movies so you don't have and we watched a few more this week than we normally have.
That's true. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We will sit around talking movies with you again next week.